We are joined by State Senator Brendan Crighton, who's with us. Brendan, thanks so much for joining us, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your schedule to talk policies and whatever is going on at the State House.
Thanks so much, Bill. It's an honor to be here. I really appreciate you getting the word out there about what we're doing up here on the Hill. So thanks for the opportunity.
All right. I want to just start with education. You've been very active in filing some legislation regarding education for the Senate to consider, and then later on, hopefully beyond the Senate and on to the joint session, if you will. But just give our listeners a brief overview of where you're going and what you're thinking of with as far as education legislation.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, for the longest time, I think most legislators up here, and myself included in the Lynn delegation, were really pushing for increased funding and also just reform of our school funding law to make sure that communities were getting the resources that they needed to educate all of our students. It's a part of our constitution here in Massachusetts that we provide an education, top-notch education for all residents. And I think because of an outdated formula from 1993, we needed to really improve upon that, which we did during the Student Opportunity Act, bringing record amounts of funding to the schools. So we got to celebrate that win a couple of years ago. The only issue being that, you know, operating dollars for schools is, you know, obviously very much needed. But if we don't have safe, modern school buildings for our teachers and students to learn in, then, you know, we're not going to be putting those operating dollars to their best use. In Lynn alone, we have 12 schools over 100 years old. They're not up-to-date spaces. They are not meant for 21st century learning. Certainly after COVID, as far as, you know, air quality, things like that, not up-to-date. We really need to reform the way that we build new schools in our Commonwealth. So I, along with the Lynn delegation, Pete Capano, Dan Cahill, had filed legislation to reform how the Mass School Building Authority funds projects, so that communities like Lynn can finally start to make a dent in our old and aging infrastructure. So we filed the last session. We unfortunately did not get over the finish line. But as we see inflation and other issues, macroeconomical issues leading to huge, huge increases in cost of construction, I think it's even more urgent now than ever that we start to make sure that communities have the resources they need to build and maintain our school buildings. So it's a big priority. I may overuse the word crisis, but we're getting to that point now where we have increasing student population in Lynn, but not the space to accommodate the students, and certainly not 21st century learning space.
Well, you see surrounding communities, Senator, being able to, you know, that don't have as many school buildings as Lynn might have, be able to, you know, build new buildings, refurbish buildings, and so on. But the numbers, the task of just meeting all these numbers of all these buildings that you're just talking about, that is enormous for the city of Lynn. In other words, a town like Swampscott, you know, maybe they did have an old elementary school, or they're building a new one, but it's like they have a smaller number of elementary schools in Swampscott than they do in Lynn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it took a while to get that funding approved over there, too. So I applaud the town for you know, remaining vigilant and continuing to push for that. And you know, every community is different in terms of their resources and their student population. But you know, we're really excited for a new Pickering Middle School in Lynn. But serious concerns, again, in terms of the cost of construction. So I really think it's incumbent upon the state to make sure that every community, no matter where you live, has top-notch school buildings for students to learn in.
Right. And, of course, I mean, if I were a resident of Swampscott, I would say that there are restrictions for towns like Swampscott to build schools through that formula that you're referring to trying to change as well. So the idea here, I think, as I'm hearing, is all these old buildings have to go, to be quite honest with you. Yeah,
no, and for those that can be repaired and updated, certainly, you know, we're interested in that as well. But even on that end, the funds just aren't there. And if we're doing one building, you know, one school building every, you know, 5-10 years, how are we going to make a dent in those dozen schools in Lynn? many other communities across the Commonwealth in similar situations.
No, you nailed it right there. Brendan, tell us about, is there anything else on, I know you're working on so many different things, but I want to touch on a couple of other topics. Is there any other education piece that you do want to discuss here?
Yeah, just quickly, last session we had filed a bill to create a commission to study, it's both education but also housing, just to take a look at segregation and desegregation of our schools as well as our housing policy across the state. So it's something historically that goes, you know, way back, you know, obviously before my time, and I think there's a lot of folks that are still, you know, they remember busing and all the issues that came with that. But the idea of the bill was to have a commission to study how we can better integrate our schools. The idea being that in a diverse classroom, every student benefits greatly. You see better outcomes long term. And so many of our school districts now are really, really becoming more and more highly segregated, intensely segregated schools, so that there's, you know, one racial group, you know, making up the vast majority in any given classroom. And I don't have the answers, and I think the idea, after looking at study after study showing in Massachusetts how, in particular in Greater Boston, how segregated our schools are, you know, what are ways that we can bring folks together in a more diverse space, and what are ways that we can adjust housing policies so that our community is more integrated. So again, this is more just recognizing that there is an issue, not, you know, supposing what the solution is, but saying, let's take a serious look. Let's have a hard conversation. Anytime you're dealing with this stuff, it's going to be a hard conversation to figure out how, if at all, you know, public policy could help improve some of that. So that's one other education piece. Look forward to having the conversation and debate again this session here.
All right, let's just switch to transportation. Let's focus right in on Lynn. You're very active in transportation. So are there any Lynn-specific transportation updates, referring, I guess, mainly to commuter rail, MBTA, and so on?
Yep, absolutely. So this past October, we had our commuter rail station close, you know, due to concerns around the safety of the station. And obviously, when the FTA came in to investigate the safety of RT, you know, the stations certainly were something that were on all of our minds to make sure that our passengers and the workers at the T were being as safe as possible. Unfortunately, we had hoped for a temporary platform so that there still would be commuter rail service in Lynn. That did not happen in a timely fashion, though we are trying to expedite the process now. So it's a big challenge, I think, when you look at the congestion, some of the you know, most congested roadways in Greater Boston, you know, some of the most congested roadways in the world, really, at this point. We need to have better public transportation access on the North Shore. And having that temporary platform in Lynn so that folks can get on the commuter rail for a 20-minute trip into Boston versus an hour by car. And to the same end on the ferry front, we were able to get $1 million for ferry operations for Lynn and in the North Shore region to, again, get cars off the road. We have, you know, major impacts coming from the Sumner Tunnel closing coming up in May. We want to be able to provide alternative modes of transportation. And, I'm, you know, we're going to keep pushing for this. It's been a challenge just in terms of getting a temporary platform constructed in a timely way and also finding, you know, ferry boats, quite frankly. There's a limited supply. So the delegation is really pushing for that. We understand people are frustrated. We're frustrated too. But we're going to continue to fight like heck to get this done. And that's just, you know, short-term transportation stuff on the North Shore. Obviously, there are many, many other issues we need to deal with. And I'm hopeful that I'll be appointed to be the Senate chair of the Transportation Committee again. We should be finding that out sometime in the next couple weeks.
Just very quickly, short response. Is there a start date for the Lynn Ferry?
No, just because, again, we don't have a boat, and to really, you know, we're searching all along the East Coast, all across the country, and they're just such limited supply right now that we do not have a start date, unfortunately. I would like to say May 1st, but I can't say so with confidence.
Yep, gotcha. All right. And then bigger transportation issues. Let me just ask you about that. You've also been active in the electrification of the commuter rail in the Boston area. Where is that standing now?
Unfortunately, the previous administration, really didn't take much action after our historic vote of the Fiscal Management Control Board, where they prioritized the LIN in the Newburyport-Rockport line. We've called it the Environmental Justice Corridor, going through environmental justice communities of Lynn, Chelsea, Revere, Everett, into Boston. And we got the vote, we got the board behind us, and the administration really, didn't do much and never made any progress despite the strong urging of legislators up and down that corridor. We've had some great conversations with the new secretary here, as well as the governor. I don't think it's a question of whether or not it happens, just how soon. And I think the Fairmont line in Boston, as well as our line, really should be the first ones to get this technology, this electrification, into place, which would bring us, obviously the environmental impacts, the public health impacts, but would give us much, more reliable, more frequent service and at a closer price point to Subway. So it really is a no-brainer, but we need to, get the funding in place and get the work done and start some of these procurements. So I'm hoping with the new administration that's supportive of this that we can get the ball rolling, but it won't be any easy lift with all the other transportation issues we're juggling with.
Now, there's definitely a few transportation issues around the MBTA for sure. And finally, let me ask you about sports betting, something you were very active in previous sessions. The bill's passed. It's been implemented at the casino level, but not for the guy hanging around and wants to go in where you buy your lottery tickets. There's no sports betting there. So what are you hearing on the feedback of what's happened in the first several weeks of sports betting and then what's ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard nothing but positive feedback from many of the constituents that have been, reaching out to me on this for a long time. We were the first people to file sports betting legislation here, our office was the first in the Commonwealth, and we've been pushing this for a while. I was pleased to see that the final bill closely resembled what our proposal was. Obviously, I think folks want the mobile component. That's not going to be here, it seems like, until March 10th. So for now, folks do have to go to the brick-and-mortar casinos to place a bet, but other than a few minor glitches, I think overall it's been pretty popular. And I think once mobile hits, that will satisfy most folks. As far as, the local stores, that was never really part of the equation. You don't see that in really many of the states or any of the states that have passed it. It's something that needs to be highly regulated and something that needs to benefit consumers. And I think by limiting it to the brick and mortar and mobile and really zooming in on that is the best first step. Certainly not ruling out other expansion in the future, but we're going to take this slowly. It's kind of out of our hands as legislators now. We gave the power to the Gaming Commission to oversee this, but certainly it's something I hear about regularly from constituents and want to monitor moving forward.
Yeah, I'm clearly misspoke when I referred to the buying it like you would a lottery ticket. You're right. No, there was the mobile app. No, I hear you. Yeah.
What's it? Happens? People bring it up all the time. It's a common question there. I mean, I understand for some folks that would be a more convenient option, but just not something we're ready to tackle.
No, I get it. Yeah. Well, Senator Crighton, anything else you want to share with us? I don't want to hold you too long here, but we always appreciate the updates. And certainly, if there's something else that I missed and you want to share, certainly this is the time to do it.
No, I appreciate it. This was a great conversation. Thanks again for getting the information out to our constituents, and look forward to chatting again soon.
You got it. Senator Brendan Crighton with us here on MSO NewsSports.com.